You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
It's Wednesday, so it's time for Wayne on Wednesday. Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment in Johannesburg. Wayne, I noticed today that there was some inflation data, and the market really grabs on to anything, particularly from the United States. I think it fell by 0.1% to 3.4% during the month of April. And then we also had retail sales. Retail sales were completely flat during the same month. And I think that, if anything, that supports an interest rate cut sooner rather than later, both those numbers.
Yes, I think so as well. I mean, thank goodness we've got some numbers coming out now that seem to support an interest rate cut, which is, of course, very, very good news for all of us. And, you know, hopefully that continues. And certainly, you know, we can talk about a couple of themes that have been happening in the market. But our market's been quite strong. The last two, 3 weeks, it's actually been very strong. It's been surprisingly strong. I'm driven a hell of a lot by Naspers and Prosus going up. But also today, the financials were strong. And there was also some recovery in some of the shares that got clobbered yesterday on the back of NHI and Vodacom and MTN, etc. There's some recovery in those shares. But, you know, today is really the financial story. Like my company, you know, the share price, it went up quite nicely, but there's some recovery in Discovery and Momentum and some other financials as well. So that's all good news. I mean, literally a month ago, we were at about 71, 72,000 on the all share. You know, now we're approaching 80,000 again.
Yeah, as you say, it hasn't been a sort of 3-4% time where things are spiking. It's just been a steady upward momentum, hasn't it?
And that's, of course, good news. I mean, as I said earlier on, there are some themes around in the market. The first one I think that is worth discussing are the cell phone companies.
Yeah.
I mean, let's put aside Nigeria and MTN and, you know, the positive of Egypt so far for Vodacom. These companies, their base home market has gone X growth there.
It has done for quite a while, in my opinion.
For a long time now. And, you know, the CapEx just cripples these companies to try and stay up to date with technology and try and expand the network and improve the network. And of course, no one actually uses voice anymore. No one. Everything's on data.
Yes.
And of course, the data prices are just coming down and down and down. So even if you get volume growth, your revenue's relatively static. So, you know, and then add on the risk, especially on MTN, add on the risk of Nigeria. I mean, when you look at their results yesterday, I mean, turnover was down dramatically when you computed everything back into rands. And of course, I mean, they caught in a terrible situation in Nigeria. They earn in the domestic currency.
The Naira.
All of their loans, all of their loans are in dollars, and all of their imports are either dollar based or rand based. So, you know, their revenue is 100% Nigerian Naira, but you probably find their expenses, if you add in capital expenditure and all of that, is probably only 15, maybe at most 20%. Naira based. When that currency collapses, it's not just the conversion into rands, it's their liabilities shoot through the roof because they've got to pay it in dollars. And everything they import absolutely everything there to run the network. And that's all also in foreign currency. So, I mean, they are squeezed like you cannot believe. I mean, it's terrible, quite frankly. Because, you know, we don't think so here in South Africa because we can borrow money in rands.
Yes.
You know, Nigeria hasn't got a capital market like ours. You know, you want money, you've got to borrow from overseas, you've got to borrow in dollars. You know, and you can't hedge the currency because there's not a developed capital market there. So you can't take out a currency hedge. Or maybe if you can, the cost of that currency hedge. But I don't know anyone who would actually write the other side of a currency hedge in the Naira.
No.
I just don't know anyone who would do that.
Yeah, it may be the biggest economy.
It's a terrible situation.
It may be the biggest economy in Africa, but it still has an enormous sovereign risk. And the other thing is that what you're talking about here is a specific South African mobile operator. And
yeah,
it is sovereign risk and it is currency risk as well. And that doesn't happen everywhere in the world. So it's not as if the company is doing anything wrong. It's just circumstances are conspiring against it.
Just out of pure interest, I don't think it's the biggest economy anymore after this currency collapse, because when you do the conversion nowadays,
oh, I see.
I don't think it's the biggest anymore. I might be wrong, but I heard a story the other day, it's no longer the biggest economy in Africa because of this massive currency collapse.
Yes.
But be that as it may. And then, of course, the whole NHI story, you know, it hit the Discoveries and Momentums and the life healthcare companies yesterday. But understand this whole fanfare of the president signing the NHI law into law.
Yeah.
I mean, that we are still so far from any implementation of NHI. We are still probably decades away from before you and I, well, not you, but me, have to contribute my pension, my medical aid, compulsory into a state scheme and then just get whatever service comes out of that scheme, you know, if and when I do get sick. I mean, we are such a long way from that happening, if ever, because understand there's serious legal complications with this. I mean, you're passing a law, it's not a tax, passing a law saying we will decide what medical cover you get, and you will be forced to pay a subscription into the scheme that you're not allowed to get your own private medical aid. I mean, you know, you could make a serious argument, why don't you do that for school education? Everyone who pays into private schools must now all pay into a central fund, and the government will decide which school your children go to, because there's no difference between that example and the medical aid example. Then they can also say, well, all you guys, you have got these private security companies, we're going to nationalize all the private security companies, and all of your subscriptions that you pay to ADT or whatever must now go into a central fund, and then we will decide what security you get. And then you can say, right, all of your motor car insurance, there's 50% of our drivers, whatever the number is, aren't insured, so therefore we are now going to take over the motor car insurance thing, and everyone who pays insurance is now going to pay into a central fund, and we're going to cover everyone. There's no difference between all of these examples and with NHI. They're actually saying, you as a citizen cannot use your own money to buy a service that you want with your own money that you've earned and paid tax on already. You know, so there's a long way for this thing to go until, if ever, implemented. And
lots of things going through my mind at the moment, Wayne. First of all, I don't know if it's a coincidence, but there's an election coming up soon. So Mr. Ramaphosa had to say, right, what do the people want? Yeah, what do the people want? It's like when Neville Chamberlain came back having met with Hitler.
And peace in our time.
And he waved the document. He says, peace in our time. Cyril Ramaphosa is waving a document saying NHI in our time. And it's not going to happen. Yeah. It's simple.
It's not going to happen.
No, it's not. It's like Trump standing up and saying, I'm going to build a wall and the Mexicans are going to pay for it. And everyone says, yeah, we understand that. Well done, Mr. Trump, and vote for you. It's never happened. It's a lot of rubbish.
No. And also, I mean, a couple of other things just on that, slightly off the market. Mm. Trump said, we're going to impose tariffs on Chinese goods and the Chinese are going to pay for it. The American citizens paid for those tariffs, man. Come on, no. Number one. Number two, I saw a fantastic film starring, you know, a portrayal of Neville Chamberlain.
Yes.
And he said he had to sign that deal to try and postpone the war because England was so unprepared. And it was a fascinating different take on the piece in our time.
Yes, it was a dramatized version, wasn't it? It was
Jeremy Irons.
Yes, that's
I think
right.
It was Jeremy Irons.
I think you're right.
It was a fantastic film. I must say it was a fantastic film. And then the third final comment, sort of slightly off market, why didn't the state president and the government throw a party and have a big celebration when they announced the unemployment data yesterday?
Well, I didn't see it. Tell me, because every time I see it, it's
Have a wild guess. Have a wild guess.
It was probably.
It's not good news.
It was probably 0.3% higher than last month at record highs or something.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. 31.3 or 32. But there was no big announcement and fanfare and calling the, throwing a party and giving everyone tea and cakes. But the NHI is a complete fanfare. So, yeah, but I do say this in defense, that every politician is at heart a politician, and they all do this.
Yeah. Of course, another word for them is liar, but it doesn't matter. They, you know, yeah. Maybe they
and
have
this
the
is
intention.
Not unique. Yeah. This is not unique to our politicians.
Definitely not. It's everywhere. Boris, yeah. Boris Johnson, David Cameron, Tony Blair.
Everyone.
Every,
all politicians.
Every single
I mean,
person.
Yeah. I'm still amazed that we as a civilization, if you want to call us a civilization, haven't invented a better way of governing ourselves than using politicians. I still can't comprehend as to why we haven't thought out a better way of doing it than politicians, because essentially, no matter what they say, they're only really interested in getting re-elected next time around.
Yes.
And the power that an election gives.
Exactly.
People always, and this is not our politicians, this is absolutely worldwide, the people come second. I think there are very few, very, very few examples of politicians that don't follow that path.
I'm all for democracy, Wayne, but I really think if you just, I don't know who gets them together, but if you say, right, these are the portfolios that are in the cabinet at the moment, and I'm using the UK because it's my home country.
Yeah.
And you say, right, forestries and fishing, agriculture, forestries and fishing, then you've got transport, then you've got defence, and you say, get the best brains in the country, not the best looking politician or the most elegant,
yeah.
Get the best brains in the country, go to Oxford or Cambridge or University College London and say, listen,
yeah.
We're offering you this job, and your cabinet is made up of practical, pragmatic,
yeah.
academics. You don't vote them in. You just say to the country,
yeah.
This is who
they're not
is
both,
running,
yeah, they're,
running the country.
The elected parliament should just set the laws, but no politician should be involved at all in any implementation
exactly.
of those laws.
We should, and
the people who implement those bodies shouldn't even change if the parliament changes.
Just one last point, because I get quite passionate about this. I've watched far too much politics on the BBC. In the last 4 years, at one stage, the Tories, just before the last election, said, we are committed to building 40 brand new hospitals in Britain, and they'll be ready by 2030. They haven't even started yet. It's 4.5 years away.
That's terrible.
I mean, 5.5 years away.
But I mean, just on that, now that you mention it, I mean, as you know, both my children live in the UK.
Yes.
And the one's actually a citizen now. So I watch Sky News every morning just so that when I chat to them, I know a little bit about what's happening in the UK. And I always look at the weather and say, oh, it's going to rain on their heads or they're having a nice day.
Yeah.
But virtually every news bulletin on Sky starts off with a problem at NHI.
NHS.
Mm. It's virtually every and every single news bulletin has got a negative NHS story in it. And this is in the UK.
It's everywhere. And it really is. I mean, and it was sharply brought into focus during COVID, of course, because they just couldn't cope with the volume of sick people. But it's rumbling on and rumbling on, and the backlog of operations, even serious operations like cancer treatments have been pushed aside.
Yeah.
And they're still trying to catch up. They need 27,000 new beds in the UK. And so far, I think in the last 2 years, they've added 5,000. Which is not enough.
Yeah.
So people are being treated in corridors.
Yeah, my daughter had both of her children in the UK, so they are by definition UK citizens.
Yes.
And she used NHS, and she said it was good. And
yes.
That was her experience.
Mm-hmm.
But she said there's no aftercare there. There's no gentle touch there. You're in, you have the baby, the moment you can walk and that you're going to live,
out
you're
you
out.
Go, yeah, exactly.
You're gone now.
Go home, and here's a nice instructional leaflet to how to change a nappy.
Yeah,
I know what you mean. Okay, Wayne, what else are we doing now? What happened to after the shock of the NHI and the health insurance companies and insurance companies? Have they recovered today?
They are up a little bit, yes. I mean, the banks are actually leading the charge.
Yes.
But You know, first of all, on the life insurance, so put Discovery aside for the moment. Talk to the other ones, Old Mutual, Sanlam. They need a bull market to actually make money.
Yeah.
And the market is heavily overtraded. I mean, so is the banking sector, but the market is heavily overtraded. So by definition, they're not my favorite shares. I mean, sometimes they'll get really cheap and you can buy them, but these are not long-term, you know, the so-called blue chip shares that you just don't really worry about. I mean, I don't, quite frankly, I know very few blue chip shares, if any, to be honest. You know, maybe ShopRite's a blue chip, Bitvest, Bitcorp's a blue chip. But there's very few that spring to mind. So I don't really like the life insurers too much. And the hospital healthcare, there's too much regulation. There's just too much regulation there. I mean, we've seen now the NHI, as we've been talking about. There's too much regulation. There's too much politics involved, distribution of healthcare. So automatically, that's a big cloud over them. And of course, exclude Discovery in that as well. So these are not naturally my favorite sectors. I mean, the banking shares 3 weeks, probably about 2 months ago, as we spoke about, were just too cheap. And there I'll use my company as an example, simply because I know the share price movement's the best out of all the banks.
Yeah.
I mean, that got down to 61 Rand. It was just too cheap. And now it's recovered and it's, what, 68, 69 Rand now. So that's quite nice. I mean, unfortunately, the platinum shares haven't done much. I know Amplats was absolutely hammered when Anglo-American made the announcement that they're going to unbundle.
Yes, it was 9% on that day, yes.
Yeah, but what's interesting on Amplats in particular is every time it goes below 700, it's at 680 for whatever reason. It doesn't go any lower than that, and it bounces up from that price. They're written December. I think it's done it 3 times this year. So that certainly seems to be some sort of bottoming price for the company. But it's very interesting that on just talking about Anglos and BHP, I mean, when I was a young man, when I started in investments, Anglo-American was diamonds, platinum, and gold.
Gold, yes.
That was it. Then when they unbundled AmGold, Anglo Gold, I thought, gee, that's really quite a statement. They're getting out of gold, and this is what essentially, you know, one of the big drivers of starting the company. And now they're getting out of platinum, which was, in theory, such an incredibly good industry to be in. And now they're selling diamonds, which was the other, you know, gold and diamond started the business. Mm. And now they're getting rid of the diamond business as well. And essentially, they are a copper company now.
Precisely. And that's what BHP wants.
Lots of other things, but they're a copper company now. And it's also interesting, they made that acquisition, I think it was in the UK, of this crop nutritional business. I forget its name now. Mm-hmm. But they've also said, hey, hang on a second, this thing's not cracked up as what we thought it would be, and we're going to spend another $200 million on CapEx there, and then no more. Mm. You know, so they're also pulling out of that. Then they're putting their nickel mines on care and maintenance, and they're selling their South American. They're going to unbundle their South American iron ore and just keep Kumba. Huh.
So they're really it can be easier for suitors to come and take the crown jewel, which in this case, and at the
Anglos doesn't want to. Anglos doesn't want BHP to take them over.
No,
that is for sure. But
not at these prices, no.
Yeah, and so what it is, and of course I'm speculating, yeah. But what it is, it is actually incredible short-termism. They're trying to show some big fat reward to their shareholders to try and stop the BHP support and the BHP bid. But, you know, especially in mining, sometimes you got to take 30-year decisions and hope that they're right. You know, 2015 for very different reasons, but they were under intense pressure in 2015. Remember, they were going to unbundle Kumba. Kumba wasn't considered a core asset. Now they're keeping Kumba, and it's considered a core asset. You know, these things change over time. And so Anglo-American's doing a response now to a hostile bid from BHP. But, I mean, who knows? Nickel could be a fantastic asset in 5 years' time. The price could recover.
Yeah.
This crop nutritional business could be a fantastic asset. You know, diamonds, unfortunately, their day's gone.
Yes, it's synthetic diamonds now. That are made. And yeah. I know it's not very romantic, but if you're lucky enough to have a partner and you're trying to curry favour with her, sorry, not Wayne McCurry, just curry favour,
yeah,
you buy them a diamond, but she's not going to know if it's synthetic or not.
You buy them big and cheap. That's all. You're not interested whether it's a natural diamond or the one grown in the lab looks the same as a natural diamond and it's 30% cheaper.
Mm.
That's the one that's going to be sold. People haven't got this affinity that I've got to have a natural diamond. So De Beers, I mean, just it's interesting on De Beers. De Beers was separately listed, then Anglo's bought them out, and then they bought the Oppenheimers out, and now they're unbundling it. But the real problem with De Beers was twofold. Number one, when Indians started cutting and polishing diamonds, they could just do it so much cheaper than the other polishing centers like Antwerp. So all of these other small diamonds that you used to throw away because it wasn't economically viable to polish them could now be polished. And De Beers just couldn't control the market anymore. They just couldn't, via their monopoly, they couldn't control the market. They just didn't have the money. So then they said, okay, we're just going for the high-value stones and the rest, you know, just free market. We're not going to try and control it. And then also a company called Argyle, which BHP used to own in Australia.
Okay.
Not good diamonds, not big diamonds, but massive, massive volume. And also Snap Lake up in Canada as well. That just flooded the market with small stones that could get polished economically in India. So De Beers just said, we're going for the big stones. And then they said, we're going to try and build a luxury brand. And then when these artificial ones started to rear their head, they say, we're going to laser etch our logo microscopically on all the diamonds to show that it's a natural diamond and people will buy it because it's natural, but you don't want to buy something artificial for that special person. And then they've worked out, men don't care.
Well, you know, certain men do, Wayne. I still think it's far more romantic to go to the Diamond District in London, Hatton Garden, or to go to Antwerp, and you go into a little room, and it's usually a Jewish fellow that comes out, and he's got a black velvet bag.
That's the minority.
Opens it up, and you pick one.
No, that's
so you're more the synthetic man, are you?
No, I just go big and cheap. And as long as it hasn't got a defect you can see... As long as it hasn't got a defect you can see with the naked eye, that's fine. Because you're not, unless you're marrying a jeweler, you know, then that's fine. And this is catching them. So I think that market's also gone. I mean, it's not going to disappear, but the mining of diamonds, you know, I think is going to become a lot more targeted to get the stuff out cheaply to compete with the industrial diamonds, because the industrial diamonds, it costs you money to make them. So that's not free.
The days of the Cullinan and diamond, Wayne. The days when the Cullinan mine near Pretoria was spewing out those huge stones.
Yeah, it's interesting. I went to Cullinan. It's a fantastic place to go and visit. It's a really nice little town. Got some nice places to go and eat. But then to go to the mine itself, it's very interesting. There's a lot of history, obviously.
Yes.
They've got a beautiful painting by Pirniev of the actual mine itself up in the boardroom. And then when I gave a presentation there and they gave me a resin copy of the Cullinan diamond, the raw diamond that they actually mined. And their argument was that this is only one third of the actual stone. And they tried to explain it. If you look at how the diamond broke off, this is only one third of the the big stone that they've actually found, and they said that we're still looking for the other two-thirds.
I'm sure they are. Okay. All right. Well, it's interesting stuff, you know. We've gone from hospital beds to giant diamonds, so that's good. But I've got to say one thing to you now, Wayne. I got a message from my son who lives in The Hague. And, yeah, he's a meat eater. He loves a braai. His girlfriend is Afrikaans. And, you know, they braai it up every weekend when the weather will allow them to. So he says he's got a fantastic butcher. And he said to me, what do you think of horse, Dad? I said, to me, they're glassy-eyed dinosaurs, and I've lost a lot of money on them over the years, you know, backing them. And he said, no, to eat. Because he bought horse meat sausages, Wayne. And he said, I don't know, I'm going to give it one more try, and I'm going to buy a horse steak next weekend, and because I want to give it a chance, because it's very big in Belgium, not so big in the Netherlands, but it's still sold here, and I don't know about South Africa. Have you ever eaten horse?
No, you won't be able to. No, I've never have, and I would always be a little bit cautious there. I like trying out different meals. I really do. I like trying out different things, but anything to do with tripe or offal, I won't touch it.
Stomachs.
I won't touch a rabbit. I won't touch a horse. I'm always, in fact, I won't even touch an ostrich. I had such a terrible ostrich one. So I'm not a, we all went to carnivores for New Year's Eve, a whole bunch of us.
Out in Muddersfield,
really,
isn't it?
Yeah. It was quite lekker, but I didn't really understand the theme behind it.
Animals, I think, is the theme.
Kudu, yeah. But it's a lot of wild animals, kudu and
crocodile.
And crocodile. If I'd have known that, I would have been a little bit more hesitant in selecting that place as the sort of year-end venue. Look, they had beef, they had lamb, they had pork, so I was fine.
Mm.
But I thought, no, let me not be that boring. Let me try some of the kudu and some of the eland and some of the crocodile. I just didn't like it.
Yeah, you're quite a traditionalist.
So I would be cautious about trying out horse.
Yes, go on.
Now, my food story is the world's biggest. It's actually in Cape Town on business the last couple of days, last few nights. So I've had to look after myself.
Oh dear.
So yesterday I bought a lasagna from a supermarket, and I won't mention the name, and it looked delicious.
Right.
And I warmed it up. I didn't do it in the microwave. I warmed it up in the oven properly as recommended, and it was awful. I must say it was really awful. So then I thought, well, what else is there? So I got out some bacon, and I put the griller on, and I made, this is about 9 o'clock now at night time, I made crispy bacon. And then I got out some pre-made waffles. I put them in the toaster. And I had crispy bacon on waffles with Tate and Lyle golden syrup as my dip.
In that green tin.
It's the only syrup you can buy. It's fantastic.
It's very, very good.
Actually, this was in a squashy bottle, but it doesn't matter. It's still Tate and Lyle.
Yeah.
And that was my sort of bachelor, if you like to call it, dinner.
She'll be back tomorrow, I'm sure, Wayne.
She is actually back tomorrow, yeah.
Good, yeah, okay. Well, then you can get back.
And then things will return more to normal.
Normal service will be resumed immediately.
Yeah.
Wayne,
so
just one.
You won't be having crispy bacon and waffles for dinner.
I just want to say one thing before we go, and I'm talking about the market now, because a lot of people have said to me, you know, Lindsay, the option straddle is being played by people on Wall Street at the moment. They're selling the calls and they're selling the puts because they think the market's going to be range-bound for a while. So they collect the premium from the call option, they collect the premium as grantors from the put option, the market goes sideways, then when the options expire, they cash in. But if they start moving out of that range, obviously the option grantors have to cover, whether it be breaking out to the upside, they have to cover their calls, breaking to the downside, they have to cover their puts. And I'm just looking at the S&P 500 now. 5,300 almost on the nail for the June futures. The highest this year, 5,333. We're a whisker away from all-time record highs on the S&P, and the low in the last 52 weeks, 4,114. It's been an amazing performance from the U.S. stock market.
Yes, it has been, yeah. Now, certainly boosted by the underlying economy and totally and utterly contrary to what I would have thought in a rising high interest rate environment.
Yeah, well said. Okay, Wayne, thank you very much indeed for a very interesting and diverse chat. And we'll chat next Wednesday.
Little quick thing. I mean, I know quite a bit about derivatives and that.
Yeah.
When you write anything, when you write a call or write a put, make sure you cover it because you can get absolutely slaughtered writing naked options.
The downside is limitless. The upside is capped at the premium that you've sold it for. Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah.
I did that with sugar options once. I'm still licking my wounds. Wayne, thank you very much for your time. As always, Wayne McCurry is a portfolio manager at FNB Wealth and Investment. And that was Wayne on Wednesday. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.